Welcome back to the Ghost Bunny Podcast. I'm your host, Bridget Marquardt, with a brand new episode for you. My guest today is Aaron Sagers. Aaron Sagers is a TV host and paranormal journalist from Netflix's hit series 28 Days Haunted and the long-running Paranormal Caught on Camera on Travel Channel and Max. He also hosts the popular Talking Strange podcast, starred in Travel's Paranormal Paparazzi, hosted Paranormal Lockdown Evidence Revealed, guest starred on Portals to Hell, The Shocking Truth, and Paranormal Challenge. He is author of the Paranormal Pop Culture Collection, contributing author to Doctor Who Psychology, Joker Psychology, and just made his comic book debut in December of 2024 with DC Comics, DC Horror Presents Number 2, when he wrote a paranormal story set in Batman's Gotham City. Aaron, thank you so much for doing the show today.
I am so excited to be here and excited to talk to you. You're one of my favorite people to chat with, so thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. It's funny because, and some of it was on purpose, but you are actually by accident. I've had so many people from New York on the podcast lately.
All right. I mean, it's a good pattern to keep up, and you know, although it's quite cold out here right now, so I am envious of you West Coasters.
Oh, it's hot here. I'm envious of you guys because I want cool weather for the holidays.
Yeah, but you know, I grew up in Florida, so I grew up with sort of the warmer weather for the holidays. So everybody that, you know, wants a white Christmas, I get it. It can be magical, but I was always used to a green Christmas.
Yeah, ours is just hot. It's like 80 degrees today, but hopefully it'll be a little cooler. But I'm coming to New York next week.
Oh, cool. All right. Hello. Okay. Well, we'll have to try to connect. I think I'll be around.
Yeah. So it's why I've been doing a lot of New York themed episodes, but a couple of them haven't been on purpose. Two of them were on purpose. Two of them weren't, but it's like four back-to-back New York. I had Elizabeth Yuko on. She wrote some articles about haunted tourism and Lizzie Borden and a whole article on Victorian ghost stories and why it's no longer a tradition. And that's, I really wanted to do a whole episode on Victorian ghost stories.
Oh, cool.
So Christmas ghost stories. So we did that. And then I had Joe Peretta. Are you familiar with Joe?
Yeah.
I love Joe. So I had him on. And then I just recorded with Dan Sturgis from the Merchant's House because we're going to go there on Friday the 13th.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. Dan's a buddy of mine. He does Paranormal Caught on Camera as well.
That's right. He mentioned that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's good people. And, you know, it's funny. Like one thing it's kind of a weird, spooky community in New York as far as we don't like. So, okay. So for instance, with Dan, you know, I've known Dan for a while. We've done the show together for a while, but we never really, don't often hang out together. So we have to be better about that kind of thing over here in New York City. So you're coming out to New York and we need to be better about us spooky nerds out here getting together and hanging out.
I know, it'd be so fun. So Dan is letting us into the Merchant's House and Joe is coming and Elizabeth's meeting us. So if you want to meet us over there.
Yeah, for sure. Like, let me know. Well, let's connect. But yeah, I'm down with it.
Awesome. It'll be so fun.
I love spooky ghost stories. I mean, I've given talks on sort of the Christmas monsters and the traditions of telling ghost stories during the holidays. And as much as I love Halloween, you know, this is where it began. It was Christmas and the winter solstice and wintertime is when we were, you know, telling these great spooky stories. So, you know, even down to the song, like there'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmas is long, long ago. So I absolutely love, you know, bringing back that tradition of the spooky during Christmas time.
Me too. And they're still eerie and spooky.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I enjoy sometimes when I do long road trips because occasionally I'll, you know, drive down to Florida, for instance, because my dog is like a little too big to fly. So we just hop in the car and we will hit the road. And it's really fun when you're driving down those roads late at night to play some of those old ghost stories on like an audiobook. But there's a bunch of them that are the old Victorian style or Victorian ones. And yeah, it is. It's just, it's chilling. You know, it's not always like jumping out scares. It's more the creeping dread of it all, which I enjoy.
Yeah, we were talking about it. Elizabeth and I were talking about it, how it's very much a visual. Like, they describe everything to you, like the creepy, cold, old farm manor house in the middle of nowhere type of thing. But their language, too, is slightly different than how we speak right now. And you just really get this sense of, like, the time and the place and the darkness and the eeriness of it all. And I just love it so much.
I know. And that feeling of, you know, we do have those locations in the United States, but, you know, they're still out there. And I've, you know, seen just recently, I was in, Tarrytown, like Sleepy Hollow area, which is, you know, just outside of New York City. And you have all these old Victorian houses there. But it's still the best ones, though, I do think are probably in like these English countryside where you can just picture, you know, a horse drawn carriage, like going up this long pathway, and you see this house emerge and you open up those doors, and it's, you know, a little bit of gust of wind goes through there. And then you see all the dust that's still settled on these old furniture. And it's just such a good setting for a ghost story.
Yeah. Yeah, the narration sets the visual, and yeah, you can like just see it and you feel like you're there, and it's so creepy. It's funny you brought up Sleepy Hollow, because I was just talking to Dan about Sleepy Hollow too. I was asking him if he thought it was actually haunted there, if it's just like a cool place to check out. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of ghost stories from there, and it's a really gorgeous little village. And it's also kind of funny that they would lean in so heavily to the legend Sleepy Hollow, the Headless Horseman. I think they only started doing that in the 90s, actually. But the town itself does have plenty of ghost stories. Everything from the cemetery, I've heard, Washington Irving's old home. I forget the name of it, but that's said to be haunted. And then there is this estate. I think it's called the Tarrytown Estate. I've stayed there a few times, and you know, they have a lot of ghost stories throughout that property. So I think it's just a matter of like, it's, you know, it's old country, it's old New York, and you know, there's just been a lot of tradition and a lot of history that's taken place there, which always lays the groundwork for good ghost stories.
For sure. Definitely. And then, of course, we were talking with him about Merchant House, which is something I've learned about in the relative recent past, just like the last couple of years. But people are saying that it's like the most haunted place in New York City.
Yeah, I mean, I think I hear about that a lot. And again, there's so many locations in New York. I mean, there's you know, I'm thinking McSorley's, you know, the old pub that's said to be quite haunted, or the Morris Jamel Mansion at the tip of Manhattan, or, you know, even like Greenwood Cemetery, you know, a big cemetery that's had to have a lot of ghost stories through there. And then, you know, Washington Square Park. There's so many locations because it's New York City and yeah, has insane amount of history. The challenge from the paranormal investigation standpoint is getting access to some of those places. And then when you go to trying to film there, even more so, it's challenging, yeah, because those location fees are not cheap. Although there's a lot of paranormal history here, I would say that it doesn't get quite the love and the credit that it is due because of those other elements. And then you consider that the people that live here are always hustle and bustle, that I don't think people are really paying attention to the spooky things that might be happening around them. They might be just so caught up in their work, their life, their social life, that they're not paying attention to the, you know, the creepy corners, the things lurking in the darkness.
For sure. I was talking with Joe about that too, that it's such a busy area and busy place. And I think this happens in Boston too. It's like you're not sensing it or feeling as much as if it were somewhere else that was quieter, because there's just so much hustle and bustle going on around you that the energy is kind of like mixed up and with everybody else's energy. So it's hard to kind of feel it and sense it going on right there. Cause we were talking about Washington Square Park. In fact, we went and walked, we did like a little, Joe and I did a tour around there and stuff. And we went over to the Shirtwaist Factory building, and it's like, we didn't really feel anything. And it was such a tragic event that happened there, and so many people died, but there's so much going on in that area. There was like you know, lots of hustle and bustle. The park is right there. And that with all the people that were buried there and all the stuff that went on at that park and the hanging tree and all that kind of stuff. It's just, you would think you would feel more, but there's just too much new energy going on.
Yeah, I think that the energy of the here and now and the living can mask some of that other stuff, can be so overwhelming. But but that said, you know, I've lived in New York a long time, and I've kind of bounced out and then come back. And, you know, I've had like crazy experiences living here, just like living in apartments and whatnot, have had weird experiences. So when you are open to it and you start paying attention to it, weird stuff can start to happen.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
I mean, actually, even just recently, I had something. Do you want me to tell you when it's?
Yes.
This was actually just the other day. I don't know. I wouldn't say that my place where I live is particularly haunted, but there's pop-ins. There's things that occasionally happen. It's just sort of like something passing through. And I've had some weird experiences here. But the other night, I was filming in Manhattan, and I'm based in Brooklyn. I was filming in Manhattan, and I got back, and it was kind of a late night, and I was exhausted, but I wasn't ready to go to bed yet, because I don't know about you, but after you're doing like a big project, I'm tired but wired, and then I still need to demand some of that like personal time. Like, I don't want to just go straight to bed. I need a minute to like read or watch a show or you know, just my own time. So I'm sitting on my couch and I'm snuggling my dog and I'm just sort of vegging out a little bit. And I hear like rustling movement behind me. And in the next room over is sort of my kitchen and then dining room areas. And so I'm hearing some rustling, and automatically my mind, someone that's lived in New York long enough, is like, oh my God, do I have a rat? Oh God, please don't let it be a rat, because, you know, knock on wood, touch wood, I haven't had that issue in this place. And I've been very fortunate throughout all the places I've lived in New York not to have to deal with that. But it was a distinct, you know, movement, and it sounded small. And then the dog perked up.
Oh God.
And I just kind of looked over my shoulder, and I saw movement, and I saw what looked like the movement of a cat. And I do not have a cat. I personally have actually never had a pet cat. The distinct movement of like a long tail, kind of a somewhat a haunch, like, you know, the haunch of a cat moving by. I didn't see a head, but I caught the back end, like a whole half back of this thing. And it was very shadowy and dark. I didn't get definition on it, but I enough to see what that shape was. And I said, what the, what? Like, because it just caught me off guard.
Yeah.
So I get up, and again, I'm like, I know I saw something, but also I really don't want it to be a rat. So I get up and I put on shoes, because I'm like, if it is a rat and I have to like, I don't want to have exposed feet. Right. So I go up in there, and then I'm trying to cajole my dog. My dog's name is Indiana. So I'm like, Indy, come on, like, come with me. Like, and she had heard this. She wanted nothing to do with it. She was like hanging back, like, I'm very kind of trepidatious about this whole situation. So I go in there and I start like looking around and poking around any corners or anything. And I didn't see anything. Thankfully, no rodents or anything. So I don't know what it was. But we both, me and the dog, definitely heard something. I definitely saw something. She was freaked out. I don't know what it was. First time I've ever encountered something like that. That it was so peculiar. And I texted a friend of mine. Like, I'm just like, holy shit. I just, there's a ghost cat. I got a ghost cat.
Yeah, I love a ghost cat, though.
Have you ever experienced a ghost cat?
I want to. I have. The Queen Mary has a ghost cat.
Right.
And I did not even know that. And I was staying on the Queen Mary and I was up late talking to my friend. It was after Dark Harbor, which is like the, you know, Halloween event that they have. I was hosting it for them that night. And so Nick was asleep on the bed. We had a rollaway bed for our good friend, and her and I were up just still talking because, like you said, after an event, I can't just go straight to sleep. So we're just up talking and everything. We're kind of whispering because Nick's asleep next to us or whatever. And I hear like a meow, and I was like, it must be coming from outside is what I was just, that's just kind of how I wrote it off and just kept talking and everything. And then I hear it again. And then I asked my friend, do you hear like a cat or like, is that a kid? What is that noise? And she's like, no, it sounded like a cat. And I'm like, yeah, must be coming from outside. But then I realized not only are we on a ship, but we are on the water side of the ship. So if you are familiar with the Queen Mary, or for the listeners, if you're familiar with the Queen Mary, it's docked at the port of Long Beach, but on the one side, it's just the bay. And then on the other side, it is the parking lot and the event space and stuff, but that's the other side of the ship, which I'm not on. So how am I hearing, this noise? And then we started listening in a little bit more, and it sounded like it was coming through, like the, it doesn't work anymore, but the old ventilation system, like heating and air conditioning systems that they have. I mean, they have modern day heating air conditionings that do work on the ship, but this is the old stuff that was coming through, and the sound was coming through that. And I was like, that's so weird. Why would there be a, there can't be a cat ghost on the Queen Mary. It's a ship. Why would there be a cat ghost? But there is, and people have gotten pictures of it.
Yeah. So I haven't encountered the ghost cat on the Queen Mary. I've been to the Queen Mary a handful of times, and I do love it. And I've heard of the ghost cat. I personally have not encountered it. This was actually my first ghost cat. But it's, you know, it, when you enter this life, when you're doing this spooky stuff, I'm sure some people think like, oh God, like these guys just, they see ghosts everywhere. Like they must think everything's a ghost. And I'm not like that. Like I'm pretty even keel as far as like, I always say skepticism is a good thing, you know, and explain as much as you can and what you can. And there's a lot of bad wiring and leaky plumbing in the world that can make those lights flicker and, you know, the sound of movement, things like that. But I also know that I've been doing this in this job, traveling with this pursuit long enough that I do tend to trust myself. But when I'm at home, it's kind of a ghost-free zone. I mean, like, like I said, there's some pop-ins, but I'm not like investigating at home. You know, I'll do interviews, but I don't, and I have some old objects, but I'm not like actively collecting, you know, the most haunted object. Yeah, I have some objects that are, some people might say are haunted or not, but like, it's not like something I'm doing at home. Like, all right, we're going to bust out the Ouija board and try to investigate at home. I like to be a kind of a, you know, clean space, you know?
Same.
So that was a weird one. That one, I'm still a couple days later, I'm still like, what the hell was that one?
So do you think it's possibly something that followed you home from wherever you were previously? Or do you think it was a pop-in?
That's the mystery. I mean, it's both exciting and frustrating, right? Because you never know. It's when you investigate, you can maybe, if you're really lucky, you can establish some sort of patterns and get a sense of, you know, where something comes from. But, you know, if you're going to go by the classic, like, signature, old building, okay, old city, you know, I've got a lot of items. Sure. I travel a lot. I also do think there's just the randomness of things, you know, moving around at all times, you know, and who knows, you know, maybe it could even be residual. Maybe. Well, no, I don't think residual if it was actively making some sort of movement or noise. But like, you know, who knows? Maybe on December, you know, 3rd or 4th or whatever, when it happened at 7 p.m. Maybe that happens every year at that time, and I just have never noticed it. Who knows? So it's exciting, but also frustrating, because that mystery of it all is, you know, not exactly, you know, knowing what you're dealing with. But thankfully it wasn't, I mean, I was startled, but it wasn't like, I wasn't, you know, kept up at night or whatever. Cause, one of my friends was like, well, you got, you know, you should try this or do an investigation. Or I'm like, no, I'm going to go to bed now. like that. It was startling and I am fascinated, but I also need to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I welcome any cat ghosts. I welcome my dog to come back as a ghost.
Yeah. I mean, those, I mean, you know, there, I've had experiences where, like, you know, my dog that passed, my other dog that passed away, like, you know, having that, it wasn't necessarily having like an apparition situation, but just a very crystal clear kind of dream that, you know, it felt a little bit like a visitation, you know?
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah. I mean, it's what you want.
For sure. I mean, I've definitely had a dream. I've had a dream about a person like that before where it was definitely more than a dream. I don't know how else to describe it to people, but like it was too real. There was smell and touch and like all kinds of things involved in it. But then I also had a really vivid dream about Wednesday after she passed away too. And I'm pretty sure it was a visitation.
Yeah. I kind of tell people that I don't, you know, I don't have the answers. I have a lot of ideas and theories and things like that. But when it comes to what's a dream versus what's maybe a visitation or a vision or whatever, I tend to think that when it remains very clear and kind of locked into your brain, and as you said, you're having kind of the sensory experience, you know, as opposed to a dream that starts to get wispy and start fading away, even when you say, like, I'm going to remember this.
Yeah.
You know, a couple minutes later, an hour later, whatever, it just starts to fade away. There's a difference between that and those other kinds of experiences.
Yeah, definitely.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
I know we talked about the last time you're on the podcast, but tell people about Paranormal Caught on Camera, because you've been doing that forever now. I love that show. Whenever I'm like murder mysteries or like Dateline type stuff when I'm going to sleep, or Paranormal Caught on Camera.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's been on 8 seasons now. It's been great. It's been you know, just keeps trucking, and I love doing it. I've been involved with a lot of TV shows throughout the years. And I love Paranormal Caught on Camera. It's, I think, because obviously for anybody that hasn't seen it, the concept is people submit videos, but also researchers, producers, we find videos out and about of purported paranormal activity, ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot, weird stuff out of Russia, all sorts of things. And what I really enjoy about the process is, now, no producer has ever said, say this. Like, nobody's forcing us to say things. So if you hear me say something really stupid, it's all me.
Right.
And it's a fun show because they have allowed me to lean heavily into things like folklore and history and theories. And even if maybe you don't like a particular clip, you'll still learn something. And then it's talking about things globally in a way that no other show is really able to do, because we're kind of traveling through these video submissions that, you know, we're covering things all over the place and a whole breadth of phenomena. So it's always kind of keeps you going. And I've really enjoyed the project. It's so fun to do. And they even let me bust out the occasional, you know, bad wordplay or pun or dad joke and let me get a little bit goofy.
Yeah, I love it. I love that people can share their clips and that we can see clips, like you said, from all over the world and from all different kinds of people, because it's something that I really love. I love hearing people's ghost stories. That's why I do this podcast. I love sharing stories with people. I like sharing experiences like that because you can so easily think, well, I must be crazy for having that experience or thinking I saw that or whatever. And so many people want to share their stories, but there's not really like an outlet necessarily. And I want this podcast to be like an outlet, or my Patreon to be an outlet for people to tell their stories, or like Caught on Camera is a way to share your clips, which is amazing. Like, I love to be able to share all of that stuff, because the more people that are talking about it, then the more people realize, oh, I'm not crazy. That wasn't just like me making that up, and we learn from that.
Yeah. And I share that. I mean, my background is as a journalist, but I've always been into this stuff. And the way I kind of move about the world is with a curiosity and open-mindedness and not being judgmental about things, because I ultimately like the idea of, you know, sitting at a bar and having a cocktail or coffee or whatever, having that space be open and welcoming enough to say, like, all right, well, you know, tell me that weird story. And now I'm going to trade one with you. It's sort of like a currency. It's baseball cards, you know, you're trading back and forth. And then I was filming a couple weeks ago in Nevada, and I was trying to get some people to share some stories at a bar where we had like a setup. And this one woman said, okay, yeah, no, I'll share a story about some strange lights in the sky. And her friend was like, okay, weirdo. So she comes and we're filming, and she's telling me this great story. And then her friend that was sitting next to her, I was like, well, you know, I actually have a story too. So she started off by like not wanting to share it, and I think maybe fear of judgment, but then kind of signed up for it as well. And I think that's what happens, is like you make it, you show that, hey, everybody's allowed to share. We're not going to, you know, call you a crackpot or whatever. We're welcoming everyone in. And then you start learning things about one another and learning things about the experience, because there are overlaps in the types of phenomena and the experience, sort of like your dreams or visions, you know, like we learn things about one another and about other cultures too. And I absolutely adore that. And yeah, I think Caught on Camera has been good for that as well. Like I'm really fortunate to be part of a project where people that watch it, like, will say like, oh yeah, man, how about those, the Aswang in the Philippines? And they're learning about these kinds of phenomena from other cultures that weren't really part of the vernacular, the mainstream vernacular before. And I think that that's super cool. And so I'm quite proud to be a part of that.
Yeah. Is there a clip or two that like stands out where you're like, whoa, that was so crazy, I can't explain it?
Well, I mentioned the Aswang thing. I think that's a good one. It's early season, maybe season two, but it's this clip in the Philippines of this guy, this form. It looks like he kind of takes shape in a shadowy way, and then you see him emerge as a person, but then he kind of phases through these security gates, and the security guards that are watching this are freaking out, and it's very unsettling. I also, there was this clip filmed around Christmas time. It was a family that was filming their Christmas celebration or whatever, and then a dog freaks out and like runs outside, and they go outside to see what the dog is doing, and you see this sort of kind of looks like Sasquatch, squatchy looking form moving in the background, and the dog is freaking out and tries to go after it, and the people are like stunned, and then the dog freaks out and then runs all the way back towards the house. I like that one. And I was actually, it's funny because a couple seasons ago, I was visiting some friends for Thanksgiving, and we saw these strange objects in the sky. It was not birds. It was not any kind of like debris in the air. Couldn't explain it. And that one is funny because I was there for it. And what do? I pull out the phone and, you know, I start filming it and we're talking about it. And then I was like, oh, that was so bizarre. You guys know these skies. What is that? And they couldn't explain it. They lived there for a long time. So what was funny about that one is like that made it to air, I think, two seasons ago. But the funniest part about it is I'm always telling people when I do talks and Comic-Con appearances, I'm like, you know, as much as you can film in like a landscape mode instead of portrait mode. And what do? Right away, I see something weird and I hold up my phone in portrait mode. Like, so I'm getting a vertical shot instead of that wide shot. So I'm a doofus.
No, I do it every time too. Even if I'm just trying to record something just for social media or whatever, I know that sometimes you do need it in that mode. But like, if I want to put this on YouTube or something like that, I always do it in the wrong direction. And then I'm like, oh, yeah. Now what?
Yeah. It's funny. What, I mean, was there a clip on that show that you've especially enjoyed?
I mean, there's been several. Let's see what stands out. Have you seen the one where it's like in the middle? It looks like it's in the middle of like a highway, like a big center divide. And there's this glowing object that's kind of floating through. I'm like, what is that?
Yeah, we see all of the commentators, all of the personalities. We see all the clips and we comment on all of them. This is the other thing I like about the show is like, I'm not required to comment on it. So if I say like, meh, I got nothing for this one, or maybe they won't force us to say anything. Or,
oh, that's good.
Or there's been times where, you know, it's called Paranormal Caught on Camera, not Debunking Paranormal Caught on Camera. And so there's a conceit with it that we're talking about things that are kind of assumed to be paranormal, even though I don't necessarily think everything is. What they allow us to do is if I say like, hey, this was an air show in England in 1997 when this clip was taken. So I think, and here's a newspaper article, they'll pull the clip. Like, so they, you know, there's the question about, well, is it, you know, who knows? And let's face it, anything can be misidentified. Anything can be honestly faked if someone really wants to. But we try to approach it with as open mind as possible. But if I say this was a literal phone app that inserts a ghost into a picture, they're going to pull that clip.
Yeah. I know about the two you talked about. There was also one, and I think it was on Paranormal Caught on Camera, where there's this restaurant, and I think it's in another country, and it shows the napkin all of a sudden just like coming, like somebody left their dirty dishes and like napkin and stuff on the table and left. Then it shows like the napkin like coming up off the plate and falling to the ground.
Oh,
and then
yeah,
all of a sudden like the silverware falls to the ground. And then all of a sudden, like the plate like flies off the table and then the chair pulls out. And like, I'm like, are they doing this with like fishing line or something? Or is this really happening? But if it's the same thing I'm thinking of, there were multiple clips from different occasions at the same restaurant with things like being pulled off the tables.
Yeah. I do remember that one. And, you know, there's a lot of clips out there too. Like I know even with the show, there's only so many that you can get through with each episode and each season. So there's some really good ones that are just, you know, in our stash. And then people show me stuff all the time that they want to show, but they don't want it on TV. And so there's some incredible stuff out there. And it makes a lot of sense because, look, we are in a world where everything is being documented pretty much all the time. So there's a lot of footage. I mean, even like I've had weird stuff. I've like not been searching for it, but I picked up weird EVPs on my on the dog nanny cam when I'm away, you know, just like to like you check in on your animal to see like, I've gotten weird like things on that one, too.
Oh, another one just popped into my head. This woman, I think she's going down to her basement to like do laundry, and it's like, you know, straight downstairs. They're carpeted, and at the end of the stairs, you see a dark shadow like peeking around the corner, and then it darts away. That one freaks me out.
Yeah, the kind of the peekaboos, the shadow ones. Those are always, I think, those are always especially creepy.
Yeah.
Because they tend to happen in like, you know, these jails or these long hallways or basements, things like that. And so those are spaces that are already maybe a little bit, you know, unsettling. But then to see that kind of thing, it gets a little bit creepy.
Yeah,
but
for sure. Know,
and seeing it in real life too is also pretty creepy when those kind of darting peekaboo type of things.
Yeah.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Tell people how you originally got into the paranormal. What was your first paranormal experience?
Yeah, I mean, the first paranormal experience, I did grow up in a house. I'm the youngest of 5 kids, and we were raised Catholic, and we did have, like, weird stuff happening in our house. But honestly, for a long time, I never really talked about that in relation to my interest in the paranormal, because it was more, I enjoyed reading about the paranormal, along with, I liked horror movies. I like sci, you know, I'm a nerd, like science fiction stuff. I comic books. I loved it all. And then I would read a lot of paranormal stuff too. And then professionally, you know, I became a journalist and I was writing about this. I was writing about like mainstream stuff, and I did some crime reporting, I guess, a little bit early on, but mainly was doing, you know, entertainment stuff, travel stuff. And then when the ghost shows kind of started popping, I started writing about it, and my writing gained some attention. And then that led to me doing the TV stuff, and people wanted more from my perspective. And that was kind of how I got into it professionally. But yeah, I mean, there were creepy things though in our house when I was growing up. And later on, even with my family now, it's funny because we all lived in the same house, but it seemed like we were having separate experiences as far as not really talking about it with one another. And even when you talk to my dad now, he's like, oh, I don't know, I never had anything happen. And then meanwhile, my sister is, you know, saying that she was hearing scratching on the walls. And I personally saw some weird kind of, I guess, a crooked neck kind of figure in the doorway of the bedroom I shared with one of my brothers. And, you know, my mom tells us that, speaks about it a little bit more now, but that she never felt at ease in the house and didn't want to be in the house alone, and didn't want to go into the back part of the house with all the kids' bedrooms, like when she was there alone.
Where all the kids' bedrooms are. You guys go back there. I'm not.
Yeah. I mean, there was one time that there was one time where I was staying at home alone. And so I was, it was early on, like, you know, one of the first times I was staying home alone. So I forget what age that would be. And you know, I don't know, 10, yeah. I don't know. And I remember watching TV, because look, it's like, you know, get the house to yourself, get to watch TV, stay up late, all that good stuff. And I was getting sleepy, and I heard in one of the back areas, the like our garage, the door from the garage connected into a part of the kitchen, and then that connected to the dining room and all that. And hearing what sounded like a jiggle of the door that led to the garage, and then it sounded like the door was opening, and immediately my thought was, is there someone breaking in or what? And then hearing something move through the kitchen, and then the clinking of glasses and cabinets, and it just felt like it was just coming closer and closer. And the feeling, what I remember at the time is like being frozen in fear, like that kind of classic trope, you know, but so afraid that like didn't move and didn't want to make a noise. And
yeah,
freaked out by the idea of like someone in the house, but also having this weird awareness of like, no, it's not that, it's something else. And it was so freaky that like, basically, you know, when my parents did arrive back home, like, you want to be tough, but also like you're terrified and you're so happy that they're back, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, weird stuff would happen like that around the house. And it's actually something that one of my goals is to maybe write more about that experience, that house. And then to, you know, I don't want to terrify anyone that's living in the house now because it's still standing, but, you know, see if anyone that's living there now or, you know, throughout the years has had experiences after the fact. I know there was one family after we moved out that had some strange experiences. I know that much.
Have you done any investigation on the location of the house? Is there any history to the house, the land, the area?
I don't know much about the land, so much. I suspect that whatever the origin of this stuff was, it was maybe, brought in by my brother, my oldest brother. I think, you know, angry teenager, at the time. And I think he was dabbling with things that he shouldn't have been. And stirred up something. I think that's my suspicion that is shared by the rest of the family. And, you know, he's alluded to it as much without coming out and saying that. So there's more to the story. It's tough getting like people to open up about some of that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Especially with like the Catholic, I feel like people who are Catholic are very reluctant to talk about all of this stuff.
Yeah. It's fascinating because I have, you know, my sister is interested in these things, but, you know, and she's done some paranormal investigations, but hasn't like, is not like all in on it, but she's interested.
Yeah.
I have another brother that is deeply religious and very much so. And I'm not saying that that's why he became deeply religious, but it's interesting that he's like kind of over there being religious. I have one brother that doesn't really want to talk about any of this stuff at all. And then there's my oldest brother that's very coy about it, but occasionally will say something and allude to the fact that maybe he was up to something in there.
So
everybody seemed to respond in different ways.
Yeah.
And then you have me, I guess.
And then there's you. Yeah.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Well, let's talk about paranormal pop culture because I feel like, did you coin that term?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, because I love it. And I feel like you're the one that I hear it from and I've heard it from like your camp for the only one and for the longest time, but I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I initially coined it as a way of talking about how entertainment influences belief and ideas in the paranormal, but also how the paranormal will influence entertainment. And so I was tracking a lot of trends about, you know, the evolution of our idea of ghosts through pop culture and what it says about us at any given time, you know, and it's evolved. Like, you know, I had the paranormal pop culture website for a long time and it's still out there, but I haven't really updated in a while, but it's still my pursuit of looking at these ideas and these patterns in entertainment, but that also extends to folklore and the urban legends and things like that. Because when you learn about these things, when you learn about the entertainment of a people or the stories of a people, you learn a lot about what they believe in, what haunts them, what they're afraid of. You know, what are the monsters in the woods or in the water? You know, what's lurking around the old buildings, things like that. So that's really, It fascinates me, and I love kind of exploring all of that. And when you see like, well, okay, this is when a particular fascination with religious horror is prominent, or this was the emergence of people being obsessed with or terrified of Ouija boards. You know, that was tracked very much directly to The Exorcist. So, you know, people, you know, freak out when they see a Ouija board. And I always ask, well, okay, that's okay. But why? Where is this coming from? And a lot of times it didn't really have that bad reputation until, you know, 1973 when The Exorcist came out.
Yeah, it is fascinating. Are there any newer trends that you've picked up on?
Yeah, I would say definitely, well, new. Everything old is new again, I guess. But there is certainly a fascination with the idea of demons. It's when I do certain talks, I will put up on the screen the distracted boyfriend meme, where, you know, he's with his girlfriend, but he's looking over at the other girl that's passing by. And I kind of say, like, the ghosts are the girlfriend, the paranormal investigator is the guy, and the demons are the new girl that's walking by, because it seems like that's the hot new thing and that's sexy. Although that's been around for a while, this fascination with demons, but in the, you know, the paranormal realm, it certainly is. It is, you know, an entertainment. It's something that people seem to can't get enough of lately. And that extends to scripted stuff too. Like when you look at movies like the Conjuring movies, it starts off as a ghost story, but it always ends with a demon. It's never quite a true ghost that's causing the problems.
Right.
So that's something that is, I think, definitely present. But you see, I think, really the influence of paranormal TV on paranormal entertainment, on scripted movies and whatnot, that it's been around long enough that we understand certain tropes and ideas, and those are carried over into the fiction space. So that's always kind of fun to watch. Like, oh, okay, you guys clearly were pulling from that, you know, Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, whatever it might be, when you were writing this script. Mm-hmm. And overall, I would say after COVID, and like COVID really, you know, there's the spiritualist movements that always seem to thrive in times of great loss of life and sudden loss of life, you know, after the American Civil War and World War One, and I would say even after 9/11. And I think COVID, we're seeing this sort of neo-spiritualism that has emerged. And I think it has taken shape in the way of people fascinated with the weirder side of things. Like, instead of just like ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot, demons, it's like, you know, fairies, it's elementals, it's other kinds of entities out there. I've noticed that pattern has really blown up on TikTok, on across social media, and I think we're seeing it more in scripted entertainment as well. Like a representation of, yeah, people, I mean, there's been a big kind of folk horror movement where people are talking about, you know, the fae and things like that. So that's something that I like seeing. I think it's an extension of the spiritualist movement, except it's or spiritist, if you prefer. It's still being in touch with the ethereal and the strange and unusual, but taking on a shape of a little bit weirder, a little bit more broad, as opposed to your standard ghost.
Right. It's so interesting. Yeah, I was talking with Elizabeth Yuko a few episodes ago about spiritualism and when the rise and fall of that happening, like you said, back with mm-hmm. the Civil War. And then she also wrote a whole article about how all these TV shows and kind of like the rise of like ghost hunting and everything kind of began not long after 9/11. And she felt like it was sort of, she wrote like a whole article about, I think it was for Rolling Stone, about it kind of being like the new spiritualism type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I concur. Like I was very much tracking that kind of thing, because, you know, you had 9/11, and a few short years later, you do have, you know, you had things like Most Haunted in the UK, but then you had A Haunting, which was a documentary series here in the States. And then shortly after that, you have Ghost Hunters and then Ghost Adventures and Paranormal State and all that. And then that really kicked off the whole wave of things. And that coincided with the emergence of social media. So you have Ghost Hunters hitting the air 20 years ago, 2004. And that was when the Facebook, you know, was there, and MySpace, and people were no longer confined by their city limits to talk about this stuff. So they didn't have to be the weird parent at the PTA meeting. They could find their spooky tribe online, you know, whether it's next town over or the two states away or another country, and then start sharing these kinds of things. So, it's not that it's new. It's just it keeps getting like a fresh coat of paint and evolves.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I mean, even when I was first had my first experience when I was a kid and everything, it just wasn't something that was talked about. It was definitely weird. I've said on this podcast before that half my family thought I needed to see a psychiatrist, and the other half thought I needed to talk to our church pastor. So it was never just like, oh, well, she's just having an experience. That was not even on the table. Like, no, there's something wrong here with her.
Yeah.
So let's get her help. But now I just feel like it's become very mainstream. I mean, there's so many TikTokers that have their channels and YouTube channels and TV shows, and so many people talking about it. And not that everybody believes, but it's become so much more mainstream. It's not weird now when somebody says, oh, I saw a ghost in my house, and let me tell you about it.
Yeah. I mean, I love it because I love trading the stories and hearing the stories, and also it makes, you know, life interesting to think about all these potentials. But I never try to sell people on belief. People have to kind of approach it in their own way. But it kind of sometimes it perplexes me for people that are entirely closed-minded, because first off, it just seems like it can be kind of a stale way of living. But also, like, you know, it's the universe is vast, you know, and we are learning things constantly. Science is constantly evolving, you know, and so who knows what today's superstition or paranormal idea might be tomorrow's science, you know. Keep an open mind about that stuff. But it's just exciting to tell those stories, too. You know, I think it does bring people together. And we could definitely use more of that in this world.
Yeah, like the Victorian ghost stories of the old days.
Yeah, exactly.
Brought them together to tell these stories. But I did have a question for you. Okay, obviously, I started this whole podcast off with saying how much I love it. I love being able to share ghost stories and everything, and I do. But how much of it do you think, and I'm talking specifically about social media, TikTok and things like that, how much of it do you think is legit versus people kind of jumping on a bad wagon for clicks and things?
I don't know. I mean, sure. I think that there are people that just, you know, it's they view it as good for business. So they're going to go for it, you know, and maybe that's okay. I think if you're manufacturing a story and then selling tickets at the door to stay in the room with a boo, so you've created a ghost, you know, out of thin air, I guess, you know, that's kind of predatory. That's kind of skeevy. But if you just kind of want to join in on the trend and go for it, I mean, it doesn't ultimately bother me. I don't think it doesn't necessarily mean that I have to enjoy it or follow that thing. But, you know, if they want to tell a good story and they need to make it up, you know, I guess that's okay. It's more when you're using it as a way to prey on other people and also take money from people.
Right. Back to Paranormal Caught on Camera for a second. Do you think that AI is going to mess with like some of the clips that you guys are getting?
Oh, I'm sure. But even right now, like as I said, anything can be faked. I think most people, if they think they've caught something and it's not that, I think most people are not trying to be nefarious and not trying to pull a hoax. They legitimately think that this is a strange thing that they captured. And then I do think there are some people that want to be tricksters and maybe they want to pull off a little bit of a hoax. But anything can be faked. And yeah, and it's only, the technology is only getting better to do that. Mm-hmm. That's why I also don't say, I'm not presenting to the world like, hey, look at this ghost photo and believe, like, this is proof that should convince everyone. Yeah. That's not really my approach. And I don't think any one photo of a ghost or whatever is ever going to, like, you know, change the perspective of the entire world. But my ultimate kind of thought is, like, be open-minded, obviously explain what you can, but also, and I think paranormal investigators can be bad about this. Like, they'll look at something and be like, that Bigfoot photo is just a little grainy. If only if it was more clear, or if that clip lasted longer or was framed better, then, you know, that would be more convincing. But then when you show something like that, they're like, it's too good to be true. So my thought is, like, with some things that I personally have experienced, I know that it was something very clear that I saw, you know, and I try to take that forward and think, well, okay, some things might actually be that good and true, you know, keep your mind open to that possibility as well. That doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean you should buy the Brooklyn Bridge, but it means keep your mind open about it.
Right. Tell me about paranormal paparazzi. Was that all celebrity based paranormal stuff or?
No. So that really was spawned out of the paranormal pop culture site. And Zach Bagans wanted to do a show based on that and was working at, like, you know, brought me in. And we wanted to make it an entertainment and kind of lifestyle newsy type of show. In fact, I would argue it was a little bit ahead of its time. It would be a different show now, but I think it was a little bit ahead of its time. But the idea was kind of like, with each segment, we're going to maybe go to a haunted inn like the Lizzie Borden house or whatever, and then also talk to a celebrity. So to always be pairing this story with that story, maybe a guy that's living in a bunker in Texas because, you know, maybe he thinks there's a zombie apocalypse coming, and then cut to an interview with Norman Reedus. So there was always some sort of celebrity element with it, but it was more about, like, getting these intrepid reporters out there to investigate this stuff. So I was fortunate to be the executive producer and the host of it, and had a great team with me of people that were out there exploring that we would send out to investigate all of these things. And
so fun.
It was great. Yeah, it really was. It was great fun. I mean, I often think, like, you know, we could, it was also a little bit styled to be kind of TMZ-esque.
That's what I thought I remembered. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, that I see the appeal for it. That's not necessarily the approach that I ultimately would have selected or would go for again. But, you know, it was a blast to film. And, you know, so I'm grateful for it. You know, it was a fun little show.
Tell me about Paranormal Lockdown.
That one. Oh, yeah.
Which one was that?
I know. I had to think for a second. That was actually, so I, you know, I had known Nick Groff and I've known Katrina Weidman for a very long time. And for that one, that was actually just me doing the, wearing the hostie hat, doing the interviewing. I filmed.
Was it a Pennhurst?
No, it wasn't even that. We filmed this 2-hour long special, like in a studio, but it was like kind of a documentary style, like looking back on investigations and whatnot and getting their additional perspective. But it was very like host driven type of thing. It's, I mean, there's, it's funny because I sometimes have a hard time remembering the different projects out there, especially between, like, you know, in addition to the paranormal, this, like, I was a producer with a sci-fi network, and then did a lot of hosting for them, and like so there's like so many projects. I think you could probably relate that over time you start forgetting about which one that thing was. You know,
yes.
Like,
yeah.
do you have that issue?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I mean, mine are a little bit easier to keep track of because they come from different, kind of way different fields separately. Yeah. but yeah, no, and I'll forget sometimes too. I'm like, oh my god, way back in like 2000 10, Nick and I were doing pitching a show, and it was to Sci-Fi. Well, or Sci-Fi is the one that we had the most meetings with that I thought was going to pick it up. And it was, he's very much into aliens. You know, his dad was one of the original astronauts and stuff. And he's really into aliens and stuff. And I'm really into paranormal stuff. So we were going to go to places that kind of were both things were happening at the same time, or not at the same time, but both, there's reports of both things there. And we shot a pilot on that. It was Sci-Fi that we were talking to the most with it, but I sometimes forget completely that we were pitching that show.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I actually, not too long ago, I ended up in a meeting. It was like a lunch meeting with some folks, and I'm talking to one of these guys that was with me, and I'm like, yeah, like, I know you. I think we, I forget exactly, but yeah, we, you know, like, we know each other. And then I couldn't lock down all the details other than like, I know your name. I know your face. Yeah. I know we talked before. And then I had to go through my emails. And I was just trying to like follow the breadcrumbs. And I remember that it goes back to he was a network executive for another network a million years ago that I had like had meetings with, pitched shows with and whatnot. And we had a back and forth and everything. And then they ultimately, that particular network ultimately passed and then presented something that was very similar to the idea that I brought them. But it's funny how like, you know, the how incestuous things can be where you're sitting across from a person that you had conversations with 10 years ago about another project that didn't necessarily go well, or maybe it did go well. But the cool part about that is, you know, I think about some of the people that I've known for a long time. Chip Coffee comes to mind. Amy Bruni comes to mind. People that I've known for, I'm now charting our friendship by like a decade plus, 15 years, you know, going on 20 years of knowing these people. And how kind of how wild that is to really reflect back on how much time of my life has been, you know, revolving around the spooky stuff and these people that have become family to me, you know, longtime friends and family. So it is kind of like being part of a club or a family, and it's pretty cool. And, you know, present company included, like, you know, it's been a couple of years now that I've known you, and that's been wild. And I've loved that. New York City is getting noisy outside. So sorry for the horns. Yeah, I don't know what's happening, but they're all saying hi out there.
Yeah, it's just New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is kind of a small community. I mean, there's a lot of people in it, but it's still a small community. Like it is possible to know pretty much everybody in the industry that's doing stuff.
Yeah. And what's nice is, you know, there's a lot of good people involved in it too. And, you know, it's good to be able to call someone up and be like, oh, what do you, you know, is this person pretty cool? Like cool to work with and everything, you know, just to kind of vet. But, with the increasing, as you said, like, you know, people are just increasingly into this stuff and being more open about talking about it. It just naturally comes up in conversation. Well, I mean, I guess people know, you know, who I am when they're talking to me, but you know, like, it's just like, you'll be randomly talking to in a airport, you know, you maybe see someone that is an actor or whatever. And then they're like, oh, you're the ghosty guy. Like, I got a story for you. And they just kind of want to go there and want to share those tales. And that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's so cool. I want that to happen to me.
I'm sure people, I mean, I think people associate you with the paranormal for certain now.
Yeah, but I don't ever get like an actor or something that comes up and is like, I have a ghost story for you. You're that ghost girl.
Oh, well, that absolutely surprises me. I'm shocked. We need to make that happen. We should do like some sort of, you know, spooky storytelling kind of thing at like some venue and just have people show up with their stories.
Yeah. Like a live event. I was talking to Howie Mandel the other day and he was like, what do you mean you do paranormal stuff? Like, are you psychic? And I'm like, no. I just like go and like experience or investigate. And he was like, what do you mean investigate? What does that even mean? And I'm like, well, I have my little like kit and I go to places that are haunted and I set it up and stuff. He's like, wait, you have a kit? You have a kit?
I would say to Howie Mandel, I love your work, but how are you so out of the loop that you don't even know? I mean, like, even if you don't do it, that's fine. If you don't believe in it, totally okay. But it's not like people just started throwing around ghost hunting as a term yesterday. The ghost hunter has been, the term has been around, I think, for 100 years now, at least, and more than, I think. And then paranormal investigations has been a genre of TV for actually a very long time, but a really constant presence since 2004 or 2002 even. So, yeah, Howie, how are you out of the loop on this?
I guess it's not his thing.
That's okay if it's not his thing. I mean, there's a lot of things that are not my thing, but I'm aware of.
Yeah. All right. I wanted to talk about Portals to Hell because you did that with the Osbournes, obviously, and you guys were at Eastern State Penitentiary.
Yeah. So that one, it was Jack. It wasn't like the whole Osborne family. So it was Jack and again, Katrina Weidman. So that was an interesting one because I was mainly there, you know, talking about history and stuff. And annoyingly, they gave me the label of weirdly tour guide on the lower third, which I'm still like, that was bizarre. Where did that come from? I don't know. Probably some producer out there that, I don't know, went crazy. But the Eastern State Penitentiary, however, is a place that is very personally important to me because when I was working as a journalist, again, I was, you know, I've always been interested in this stuff, but I was doing like not paranormal things. I was not writing about the paranormal as a job. And I had an experience at Eastern State Penitentiary that really kind of shifted my perspective and made me want to do this professionally. And then that was like one of the things that got me into writing about the paranormal as part of the job. And then it's been a place where it seems like I always kind of have returned to at interesting pivotal moments in my career, like, you know, going and filming there or being asked to do like certain events there. It just kind of kept popping up in my life. And sadly, these days, they're not so much interested in talking about the paranormal, which is a bummer to me. But, you know, hopefully that will change at some point, but Eastern State has always been really important to me, and I've filmed there a lot, I've been there a lot, hosted a lot of events there, and I think it's a gorgeous, historically important place that is, I think, pretty stupid haunted, and, you know, had like a full-on shadow figure rush me. And
in what area?
So I'm not going to say the cell block because I keep this as a little bit of a mystery. So when I'm there, I can test this.
Okay.
But what happened was I was looking in this cell block or cell in this cell, and you've been there. So it was one of these cells where there is a barrier, so you can't go all the way into the cell. And I was just kind of walking around and I saw this figure, this shadowy figure in the back of the cell. And it was pacing back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, just kind of casually pacing back and forth. And at this point, I was just like, all right, what is this all about? And I'm like, okay, if there's something there, come closer, back and forth, and it stops. And then it rushes me. Entire field of vision goes in like totally black. I leap back. I definitely let out a few swear words. And then when I regain my composure, I poked my head back in there, and this thing is back to pacing back and forth. And what was interesting is later on, when I was there as part of a paranormal investigation, I had not shared this story. And I think it was Dave Schrader who was leading a group. And he was like, well, you know, a lot of people kind of misidentify, you know, what they think is a shadow figure. And a lot of times it's just a explainable light situation. And I'm like, oh man, maybe it wasn't that after all. But then he says, but in this case, it almost looks like there's some sort of shadowy form back there pacing back and forth. And then since then, that was still early on in me doing these events. Since then, I've been back many times and I've used that space to kind of test like what kind of vibes people get, what they might see. Sometimes I'll send someone, you know, down this area. Not, you know, they may have heard this story, you know, through interviews, but they still don't know the area. So I might have someone like walk down an area and say like, oh, okay, well, you know, if you get uncomfortable or get vibes or whatever, you can pause or turn around and come back. And typically people have gotten to a certain spot and they turn around, and it's consistent. And it for me, it kind of validates that experience more and more. So it's kind of like a personal experiment that I play, but it's cool because many, many times it's been validated for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I was there a long time ago. It was way back in 2012. And I was actually there not for a real investigation, but I was doing a thing for Yahoo News. And it was a 6-part series on just like spooky things for Halloween time. And one of the things we did was go to like the most haunted place in the US at that time or whatever. Those titles always change, but like at that time, that's what they dubbed as the most haunted place. And we went and did a story there and got like a tour, and they locked me in Al Capone's cell.
Yeah.
And, you know, did the whole thing. And it was cool because we were there. We were not the only ones there, but it was closed to the public. And it was nighttime and we were just finishing up filming and everything. And they also do a manufactured haunted experience there, like, you know, like a haunted house.
Yeah.
It was around Halloween time. It wasn't even close to Halloween time though. It was like the end of September ish and this was before they started doing things early, started opening them early in September. And the guy who was putting it on came and asked me if I wanted to go and just walk through it and see it. And so we went and did that too, but it was just so cool to kind of be there basically alone in this place filming. I mean, there was like, you know, their PR person and a security yeah. guard and stuff like that. But like, it was just so, so cool.
It is just very cool, but it gets very creepy in there, especially when you're alone or with like, you know, only a couple other people. I've been able to roam around in there, and it immediately you go on the other side of those, like whatever, 20-foot walls, and you know, it was designed to look like this imposing Gothic fortress, even though it was not designed. It's not like era appropriate for that. It was designed to look older and dungeony and scary because you don't want to be there. It was, you know, yeah. a prison. It's a place you don't want to yeah. be. But you go on those other side of the walls and immediately it's a temperature differential. It's like it's way colder on the other side of the walls or like way hotter, and so the vibe automatically feels different. And yeah, it gets like, I remember I was walking around at one point in there, and because they used to do what was called Terror Behind the Walls, which is what you're talking about, they no longer do that, but there would be all these mannequins dressed up in these prison jumpsuits and they would store them in an area. So I remember like walking through this area, just kind of doing like my own thing and walk into this hallway, and suddenly all of these mannequins dressed up in these prison jumpsuits. And I nearly pooped myself because I'm like, oh God, like, and it was explainable, but still creepy AF.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure you told me this story before, but I don't remember the details. So you got to go ghost hunting with Aaron Paul.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I filmed a show. It was called, I think, Super Into, and it was like a one-off episode, but it was at the Kreischer Mansion in Staten Island, and because he was interested in the material, but hadn't really done any paranormal investigations. And, you know, I mean, he wouldn't have remembered this, but I had interviewed him a couple times before through, you know, just as the journalist gig, and, you know, really cool guy and everything. But what was funny is like we were using Ouija board and he did get creeped out on that Ouija board. And normally for me, the Ouija board, I'm not freaked out by it. It is what it is, but it did seem like we were getting interesting responses. And if I recall, like he was even, I don't know if this made it to air or if we were even filming at this particular moment, but I think he was asking about, you know, his wife or having a kid or whatever. And it seemed like maybe he was getting the response he wanted, because shortly after that, I guess he found out that he was going to have kids, and it seemed to, you know, confirm what he wanted. So, that was funny, but it was really quite hilarious that he basically got up and from the Ouija board, like, nope, like, I'm out, like, just walked away. And I was like, dude, yeah. I think you just left, you know, if the rules are true, you just left the portal open. Like,
so, yeah.
But yeah, it's cool. I mean, like, you end up in these random situations where people just want to, you know, talk about spooky stuff.
Right. Have you ever done table tipping?
I've witnessed it. Yeah. It's not worked on me personally.
Yeah. I did it for the first time in Canada. I filmed this movie for some friends, but they had me come and just be me and take them on like a paranormal investigation. And it wasn't scripted or anything. Like, it was just me. And we did a table tipping thing, and it was just a traditional card table, like, you know, folded legs, you know, whatever. And this thing moved, and it like wobbled, and it moved across the room, and it was crazy. And I've never had it work for me before, but this time it worked, and it was crazy. We had two EMF meters on the top of the table. Both of them were lighting up at the same time while it was doing it. It was crazy. It was so much fun.
And I like those kind of old school approaches. I mean, I like gadgets, you know. I don't present myself as like a tech guru, more history, you know, research, theory. But, you know, I like gadgets. I thought I saw a dead bell in the background behind you. And I love those. I think those are very cool. But when I lead investigations with other people at like public events, and I try to encourage, like, be in the moment. You know, it's not all about like looking at your the lights on a meter or whatever. Because when you're doing that, you're not paying attention to what's around you. And I kind of go in with the idea of like, let's keep this at like, let's go as low light as possible, you know, total darkness. Let's feel the vibes. You know, let's not be macabre, because I always say, be the people at the party that you want to talk to, you know, chit chat, small talk. How's the food here? Cool parties. Any good jokes? You know, like you're trying to break the ice with someone at a party. You know, you're not gonna go in heavy with like, how did you die? Or you're not gonna ask the deep questions if you just meet a person at a cocktail party and be like, oh, so yeah, you know, how's this been for you? You know, like, so I try to keep that in mind. But yeah, really being present in the space and, you know, looking and feeling and all of that. And even like the table tipping, you know, that's a little bit more organized, but I like that kind of old school, like hands-on, really you're there. You're not just looking at some screen or meter or things that, you know, go blinky blinky, you know, chiming off and everything.
Right. You did some stuff at the Winchester House, right?
Yeah, it's been a number of years. I went there a couple of times. Did like a paranormal investigation there, filmed there, lights on, lights out. And I just find it to be an incredible location. It was actually one of those places for me that before this was ever a job, like, I was very familiar with that story, you know, probably being exposed to it by like, you know, like there was the Mysteries of the Unknown books or various TV shows that would talk about the weird stuff. So Winchester was one of those favorite locations for me. So it was like ticking a bucket list item, being able to do that. I mean, like, it's an incredible building. You've been there, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. Lots of times. Yeah.
It's gorgeous. Have you had a spooky experience there?
I mean, I don't think that whatever's there is necessarily real spooky or anything, but they let me come there, I think it was 2 years ago now, and they let me have the place to myself for two nights.
Oh, cool.
And just film. And so, I mean, I had a PR person there and a film crew, but like, we were doing this thing where I interviewed Walter Magnus. He's the general manager. About like all the stuff that was going on there and some events that they were going to be having and stuff. And then I asked him on camera, like, can I come back tonight and do like a little investigation or like walk around and stuff? He's like, yeah, but I'm going to send a PR person with you because I don't want you to get lost in here. It's crazy. So I'm like, all right. So then we filmed me coming back at night, and there's nobody there. And I'm looking around and I go up to the front door of the mansion and I open the door and it opens. And the second I put my foot in, I am in Victorian morning where all of a sudden, like, everything changes. And I look outside and see myself outside with the PR person.
Oh, that's cool.
So, like, I turn into Sarah Winchester type thing. And then, so we were filming that scene where I go in and out the front door. And when I come in the front door, there was a producer, like, ducked down behind me, shutting the front door behind me. And then I would have to turn around. You know how you have to repeat the scenes a bunch of times. I'd turn around and go back out. And he would go around the corner to be hiding so they couldn't see him. Well, this time I turned around to go back out. And I grab the doorknob and I open it. And it, like, pulls out of my hand and shuts again. I mean, I only had it out like an inch. It's not like it was way open or anything, but just enough to where I felt it pull it back in. And so I thought, oh, the producer is still there. And he's like, didn't think he shut it tight or something. So I pull it again, but there's nobody there. He's like around the corner hiding from the cameras. So that happened, not super spooky or anything, but, and then another thing, I'm dressed all like this with a veil on and like a candelabra and stuff. And they had me go way down the end of a hall by her carriage. And then they're setting up the camera at the very, very other end. And I can see them and I can hear them, but I'm pretty far from them. And I'm waiting for them to set up. And I just felt this really, really eerie feeling that, like, I was not by myself standing that there. I almost felt like there was something, like, going to whisper in my ear. Like, I just had that feeling. It didn't happen, but I felt like it was going to.
I know that exact space that you're talking about. And that was, there was a couple times I was moving through the house and I was just, you know, there were some vibes and whatnot, but that was a space actually that I distinctly felt like there was just something there. And it felt to me like kind of masculine, sort of like, you know, like it felt like there was like a bigger guy down that hallway or something. So Clyde. I relate to that kind of that feeling in that space, that particular space.
Yeah, it was crazy. But I love the Winchester House, and I'm so grateful to them for giving me that experience. And I know that they want to start allowing, like, sleepovers or like that type of thing. And I'm told them I want to do that so bad. Like, you have to let me know.
Yeah, in a heartbeat. Like, in a heartbeat, yeah. I would be there. I love that building so much. And the more I've learned about Sarah Winchester, because there was a lot of stories about Sarah Winchester that were just accepted as fact, but like the woman herself, like, is so much more fascinating to me. Like, a lot of the information that's come out about her, you know, a very charitable woman, it seemed like a good soul. So I love that building.
Yeah, and she's sort of been deemed like a recluse and stuff, but she had a houseboat and she was like doing things, like, a lot of it. And people think that she was crazy, but I think she was brilliant. Like, she built that house.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like kind of you see that a lot with like these ghost stories and the lore, the ghost lore, you know, it's the sexier version sells, you know, and that's what starts becoming treated as history. That's why, like, you know, when I travel, you know, I still like going on walking tours, ghost tours. It's a job, but it's what I love. And I like the tours where it's like, here's the history, and the history is accurate. But then this is what some people report, because as long as you get the history right, I'm like, okay, you know, I want to know what people say they've experienced, but I the history still needs to be accurate, you know?
Yeah.
So, I'm still that nerd that, like, you know, I would just go to Winchester just for funsies, not even to film, just to hang, you know, or going to go, like, you know, I'll probably in a couple weeks, next week, go to Savannah on my way to Florida and probably pop into one of the ghost tours there. You know, it's a great town for walking tours. And I enjoy doing that. And I just can't really get enough of it. And it's this kind of spooky pursuit, like, has opened up, you know, a lot of, like, just like fun opportunities for me as, like, I'm sure you appreciate this. Like, you know, you just get to be like a kid in a candy shop.
Totally. Yeah. Tell me about this paranormal comic book.
Oh, well, thank you for asking. Yeah. Well, it just dropped as we're recording this. It dropped on December 4th. It is DC Comics. I get to.
That's amazing.
This was. Yeah, I know. This is definitely. Wow. Like bucket list. I wrote a story. It's a paranormal horror story set in Gotham City. So it's in the world of Batman. It's the villain, the Penguin. What haunts the Penguin? And I got to create a brand new character that I hope we get to see more of in future stories. It's a it's called DC Horror Presents Number 2, part of an anthology. And there's two stories in the issue. There's my story and then a story called The Living Doll by a writer named LaToya Morgan. And I have an excellent artist named Ryan Kelly that did the work on mine. And yeah, it was just like I had been talking to the folks at DC Comics for a while, just through, you know, those random networking channels. And I was like, hey, how about this story? And they went for it. And yeah, I was able to write a ghost story set in Gotham City. I've been very fortunate with a lot of opportunities, and I'm proud of so many things that have kind of happened. But man, this is one that, like, being able to hold a comic book and have my name on the comic book, I'm like, this is freaking awesome. Like, it's I'm giddy about it.
Yeah, for sure. That's so cool. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I hope all of your listeners out there and you will go pick it up, because I want more of this guy, more of these stories with this guy. And you know, it's if you like comic books, if you like ghost stories, you know, check it out.
Yeah. And where do people buy comic books these days?
I mean, you can get them online. You can buy it online. You can go to a comic shop. You can go to a bookstore, you know, all the usual places, you know.
Okay.
I know out near you, you've got like multiple great comic shops out there. So, you know, but yeah, you can also get it online.
Okay.
DC, awesome. DC Horror Presents Number 2. And the issue is Batman on the cover. He's looking rather distressed. He looks like he's bound. He's got a bat in his mouth. It's kind of gory. And then, DC Horror Presents Number 2.
That's so cool. And tell everyone listening how they can follow you on social media and all that good stuff.
Well, thank you again, Bridget, for having me on, just because I like chatting with you, and it's just like an easy conversation. Yeah, you can hit me up at Aaron Sagers pretty much everywhere on social media. I'm actually even dipping my toe into Blue Sky. I'm on Threads in Blue Sky as well. And I'm trying to figure that one out. But
yeah,
you can also, you know, Paranormal Caught on Camera episodes are on all the frickin' time. You can check out 28 Days Haunted on Netflix, which has been a really popular series over there. I host that.
I didn't even get to ask you about that one.
That was, well, you know, I'm around. We can always do a follow-up. And then I also have a podcast and YouTube show called Talking Strange, which is an interview-based show where I talk to authors, researchers, celebrities about the paranormal and their world as well as my world. So we've had Nicolas Cage on there, Patton Oswalt, Karen Gillan, and then also folks like Jeff Belanger, Dave Schrader, Richard Estep, Amy Bruni. So it's a mix of everything, but we're always getting around to the talking spooky stuff.
And I'll be on there too.
Yes, you will be back on there, and I can't wait.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming, sharing your stories with us. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Ghost Bunny Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me on my spooky adventures, and I look forward to sharing a new ghost story with you each week. Please subscribe to our podcast. You're always the first to know when a new episode is out, and follow us on social media at Ghost Bunny Podcast on Instagram for photos and sneak peeks, and at Ghost Bunny on YouTube for the video version of the podcast, and the new Patreon, patreon.com/ghostbunny for spooky tours, investigations, and much more content. Thanks, guys.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.